Welcome to In Moderation,
the show where we give you a moderate dose of info, sarcasm, and we already know we're not approved.
Welcome back to episode 10. And in this episode, we are conjuring up someone special. We are summoning Morticia from the land of the damned.
We got there. We're getting there. All right. So, all right, Rob, what did we decide to talk about today?
We're going to talk about the foods that murder or kill you.
Oh, I always get asked in my comments, like, what foods should we be avoiding? And finally, we get to the episode. It might be on a podcast and not a video, but now you will learn what foods you need to avoid at all costs. Okay. So we already know some of them, right? Like, I feel like you and I, Rob, know a few of them. She'll add some, We need to start off with the one that's obvious, and that's Necco wafers, because holy shit, I ate those one time, and it was like the worst experience ever. I'm pretty sure I thought I was going to die.
No. It's bananas. Bananas are terrible. Stop eating bananas, people.
Oh, come on now. Bananas aren't that bad. Necco wafers are compressed toothpaste with evil tossed in. If you were born after World War II, how are you still eating them? Who goes to the grocery store and says, yes, I want some Necco wafers of all the candies? They should be out of business yesterday. I know one of the other ones.
Necco wafers.
So, Morticia, welcome to In Moderation. This is welcome how crazy we are.
I'm vibing.
This is what we do.
I'm enjoying it.
We yell about things, but also I guess we should toss in some factual information here and there. Fine, guys, we get it.
Fact, bananas are terrible.
Okay, besides his Rob's awful opinion of bananas, what is a food that we should probably avoid for our health? What give us one food?
One food.
Start there.
Okay. Well, I know raw milk gets a lot of coverage, so I'll skip past that one. I would say raw oysters. That's a scary one for sure.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about like raw shellfish. You know, it's like there's always I know there's bacteria in there, and I know it's bad, and I know it can fuck you up. But I've heard horror stories. That's about the most
many horror stories.
Oh yeah. Right?
Is it okay? Is it worse if it's grown in certain locations, Morticia? Well.
So if you get oysters that are harvested from cold waters, especially if they're like winter harvested, your risk for that bacterial disease, for that bacterial infection does lower. It is not foolproof, but it does lower. So that's some good news.
Okay. So if we're going to be stupid, how can we be stupid the smartest? If I'm trying to be the smartest stupid I can be.
The smartest stupid he can be.
That's basically my life.
Yeah, that's so, Liam in a nutshell.
That's pretty much my life. It's been working so far, so I'm going with it. So if I'm going to be the smartest stupid, then I'm going to get oysters from cold water.
Cold waters that were harvested in like the colder months. So like December, January, your risk is much lower than if you're getting oysters from a tropical location in the middle of like July.
And I'm assuming that's just because bacteria thrive better in warmer waters.
Yes, but not quite. So it is that bacteria thrive in warmer waters, but it's specifically, there's this specific bacteria that is especially prone to oysters. It's a big fan of oyster meat, and it is especially tolerant of warm temperatures. Even just a few degrees difference in ocean water, this bacteria, which is Vibrio, by the way, I should probably name it, can spread very, very quickly, and it can grow really, really fast. Right.
How about give us some fun symptoms if we contracted this fun bacteria?
Oh, gosh. Well, so it has multiple, it can cause a few different diseases. So one of them that it causes is cholera. You've probably heard of cholera before. But the real bad guy for Vibrio is Vibrio vulnificus. Sounds like a terrible Harry Potter spell. Not only can that one cause food poisoning, but if you get even really small amounts of it into like a wound, so maybe you're shucking oysters, you scrape your hand, it causes really, really terrible skin infection that can just ravage someone's body in relatively a short amount of time, like 24 hours, 48 hours. And it causes really serious necrosis, which is that tissue death where tissue starts...
We're talking losing limbs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're going to lose a lot of limbs. recently, there was a news report of a poor young woman... And she lost, like, four of her limbs, I want to say. So, it's kind of brutal.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So, it's basically, will you shit yourself to death from cholera? Or will you become a quadriplegic? Will you lose all your limbs, I guess? A quadruple amputee. That sounds... I don't like any of that. I'm going to be honest. I'm probably going to pass on the raw oysters. Plus, they taste terrible.
Well, I mean, if you're going to get your raw oysters, at least get them from Canadian waters, from Canadian raw oysters. This podcast has been brought to you by the Canadian oyster industry.
Our home and sacred. I know the first like five words of the Canadian.
You did. Water. I'm impressed.
Our home and native lands. Our home and sacred
our
lands.
Our home and native oysters.
Through something. I don't know. I barely know the American national.
Watch out for beavers. They might, I don't know, gnaw off your leg.
You might hit a moose. Okay, so raw oysters, definitely off the table. Plus they're just gross. Like, they're just gross. Like, why of all the foods, you're just going to open an oyster? They're all slimy and gross. And I can't give up. Oh, now that we have Morticia, I want to ask her, because I saw a different person talking about a food, and that was candied apples, that we should avoid those.
Really?
Because the stick that goes into the apple, apparently bacteria, because you got the little wood, and there's bacteria on the wood, and it goes in the apple, and it just like manifests there, and then you eat it, and it's bad. What about that?
Yeah, so what they're referring to, I think I know what you're talking about, or the video, I should say. I think I know what video you're talking about. So fruit, produce, you know, all this stuff, it has bacteria on the outside. It has bacteria on the peel, on the skin, or the rind. And a lot of the times, that bacteria usually isn't in high enough amounts to hurt us, because there's only a few cells there on the outside of that fruit. But when we take a skewer, like a stick, and we push it into that apple, the bacteria on the outside of the fruit have now been pushed into the center of the fruit, where it's wet and there's sugar and there's not a whole bunch of other bacteria. So these are excellent conditions for all of that bacteria to grow very, very quickly inside of that fruit.
It's a breeding ground.
Yeah.
Yummy.
It's a breeding ground. Bacteria. It's like a little petri dish in there.
Yeah, exactly. Little tiny petri dish inside of your delicious apple.
I always called the center of an apple's petri dish, and now I know why. Now we know why we call it.
How fitting.
But okay, so like, is there like more common things you put on that? Like common bacteria or something? Like what, you know, like what could I get from that?
So it can depend, but the big ones that you're looking at are going to be just the general ones that are usually a risk for produce. So like Salmonella is one, Listeria, and a decent chance of like some E. coli, because E. coli is common on produce due to how it's grown.
That sounds bad. That sounds.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds real bad. All I remember about E. coli is fecal oral route. That's what I remember. Yeah. Whenever I get E. coli, like poop to mouth. That's how you get it.
See, you're already an expert.
Apparently, next time you go to the county fair, stick to the cotton candy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm already. I could go into any lab right now. Give me a lab coat. And let me just film, because I always, you know, you always see more. Like when you have a lab coat on, people trust you more. I might just start wearing a lab coat. Maybe like a stethoscope. Is it too much to wear both, or should you just stick to one?
You know,
I think if you wear both, you end up looking too much the part.
Too much. It's a little too on the nose.
You're not going to find too many stethoscopes in a laboratory. Not going to find too many of those.
Hold on. I don't know if the bacteria is growing right. Let me just put my stethoscope up. No, I hear it growing. No, I hear it growing. What was some other? Oh, Rob, you got any other foods that you like heard of that, like, you know, we should avoid that.
Here's one. Defrosting fish in the bag that it came with.
Oh, I don't think I've heard this one.
No, I heard about that recently.
I've never heard of this either. That's an interesting one.
I don't remember what they said exactly. I remember being like, interesting. Tell me more. Ooh. And then they did not tell me more.
My best guess.
I guess just don't, if you're listening, don't do that. We don't know why. We don't know why. We're supposed to do it just in case. Put it in something else. Who knows? Does it matter? No. Well, I know Thanksgiving just passed, but we should probably talk about this because people are probably sick right now because of it. You're not supposed to put the stuffing in the turkey, right? This is what I've heard. You put the stuffing in the turkey and the temperature isn't high enough and bacteria. Those are the three things I know, right?
Yes.
Okay. So stuffing outside of the turkey, you put it in there and the temperature isn't high enough. There's like salmonella and shit in the turkey. So, you know, it just breathes in there. And then you just got salmonella for Thanksgiving. And the next few days, you can't even enjoy your leftovers because you're just puking your brains out.
You got the bug guts.
Exactly. You finding anything, Rob? Are you Googling over there?
I did Google it. And as you were talking about that, apparently thawing fish in its package presents a high risk for botulism.
Oh, okay. Botulism.
I've definitely done it before.
And the FDA recommends to defrost your fish overnight in the refrigerator with taking it out of the bag.
Interesting. See, my solution to this is
I guess I'll have to put it in something else, a different container, and thaw it out. Mm-hmm. So, okay. But one thing before I forget, I want to talk about. So, we know we've talked about raw milk a lot. Guys, if you don't know, TLDR, don't drink raw milk. Lots of bacteria. Bad. Not good. But I want to get more into the raw cheese, the cheeses made with raw milk. What are the chances with that thing? So I'm assuming it's less because it's like either the cheese is fermented or something, like it's processed in a way that makes the risk lower. But what are the risks still with like raw cheeses?
So it really depends on the cheese. So some of the like hard cheeses that are aged longer, like Parmesan, for example, there is still some risk because you're using an unpasteurized product, but the risk is much lower with that type of cheese, and the risk lowers further the longer it has been aged. If we're looking at a cheese that has more moisture, so like a queso fresco, for example, or a mozzarella, there is still a pretty significant risk there for disease. And even among these cheeses that are regularly produced with unpasteurized milk in like parts of Mexico or parts of Europe, there are regularly outbreaks of disease connected to them. So the risk doesn't go away. It just lowers.
Interesting. Okay. So for the longer you ferment it, the better. Mm-hmm. Still a risk. Consume with that in mind, I guess.
The lower the moisture, the better.
Yeah.
Lower the moisture, the better. That's good because I like Parmesan the best. Like, I'm definitely more of like, oh, what are you, Rob? Are you like those? I don't like those like soft cheeses and stuff. Fine.
I agree with you on the Parmesan. Throw that on some.
Parmesan's the best. And I know mozzarella's made with like pasteurized milk. But like, yeah, I know there's cheeses, whatever, softer cheeses are made with unpasteurized milk. And I'm just like, I'm not one of those cheese people that are like, oh, it smells like feet. Give it to me. It's gross. But I'm going to stick with my Parmesan, Reggiano, and that sort of stuff all day. Asiago. I know cheeses. Okay, so I wanted to make sure to talk about that. Oh, that's the other one I wanted to talk about. What's up with sprouts? I need you to tell me about sprouts because I like alfalfa sprouts and broccoli sprouts, but I've heard that these things are, again, breeding grounds for bacteria, and it makes me sad.
Yeah, so I also love sprouts. I love them on sandwiches, love them in my ramen. They are considered a high-risk food, particularly for salmonella. And Listeria, and I want to say E. coli, but I could be wrong on that last one. But the reason that they're so high risk is due to how they're grown. They're grown in very high moisture environments, and they're grown in humid environments. And both of those things are ideal for those for those nasty little guys that like to get us sick. And with Listeria specifically, Listeria can grow pretty well in cold temperatures. So even if something is in the fridge, Listeria will be just happy. And so that's part of the reason why they are a high-risk food. Even when they're refrigerated, Listeria doesn't really care. Keeps on vibing.
So like all greens kind of have that risk, but it's a little bit more so with sprouts due to the way they are grown.
Yeah, it's due to that high moisture and the high humidity. Greens in general can have a significant risk for food poisoning, and that's partially due to how they're grown, but it's also partially due to how porous they are. Their leaves have all those wrinkles and veins and stuff, and those are really, really ideal for hiding small amounts of bacteria that can grow into bigger amounts of bacteria and get us sick.
Interesting. So I also was looking into this, you know, what dangerous foods, and I came across bagels, and I freaked out for a second, but I learned that's because, bagels are sending people to the emergency room because they are cutting them with a knife and missing injuring themselves. Oh. So that's not a bacteria thing, but just be aware, guys. Maybe get the pre-sliced bagels if you're not so knife savvy, right? If you don't, or maybe you don't have like a bagel cutter or something. Just be careful. Bagels are apparently super dangerous.
I just cut my bagels with an axe. Oh. I mean, why not, right? Okay. Axe right there.
Work
do you
smarter.
Have a bagel holder? How do you cut it? Do you just put it on its side and just put it down and hope?
I took my wood carving tools and I notched a little bagel notch into my splitter wood and put the bagel in there and just boop. There we go. Split bagel.
So, all right, guys. So either buy them pre-cut or get yourself an axe and a setup for a bagel cutter.
There we go.
but moving on to real ones, Morticia, what about potatoes? Okay, because I know when they get all sprouty and green, I know there's a thing, solanin, I know that's bad. When can we not eat potatoes? When's it okay just to like get rid of the little like spud things and just be like, yeah, this is fine?
Yeah, so once your potatoes have that green sprout that's coming out of the spud or whatever it's called, I believe if that green sprout is more than like just a few centimeters, you're supposed to discard the potato. And that's because of certain like toxins within the potato that can get us sick. I can't remember the name of the toxins. But yeah, if your potatoes are sprouting in your pantry, unfortunately, you can't really cut off the sprout. You have to toss the potato.
I know. I'm a potato guy.
Yeah, potatoes are amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, if it's just like, you know, it's got one little thing on it, you know, cut it off. You're like, yeah, it's fine. What do you know about rhubarb, Morticia? Isn't rhubarb poisonous? Like, I know you can't eat the leaves. You can eat the stems. Do you know about that?
I'm like kind of familiar, like I know kind of what vein you're talking about, but I do not know nearly enough to answer that.
Right.
But yeah, I remember hearing that like...
I won't bring that up, so don't eat...
She's a microbiologist, not a botanist.
Yeah.
Not a botanist.
Come on, those things go hand in hand, they're right there.
Okay, I got one.
Okay. Yeah.
Fried rice syndrome.
Oh, no.
Is that the one we fried rice out?
Yep.
Is that the one, like, with the guy who left it out for a week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so fried rice syndrome is the colloquial term.
I heard about that guy who left his, like, fried rice out for a
week. Yeah, I believe it was, like, pasta. It might have been rice. It's happened multiple times, but it's the colloquial term for Bacillus cereus food poisoning. And Bacillus cereus is especially common in high, like starchy foods. So rice is the big one, but also like pastas. You can get it from potatoes. Really, but a lot of the really starchy, carby foods that we eat regularly, high likelihood of having Bacillus cereus.
But is it Bacillus cereus strain F?
It is not. Unfortunately, we can't all be immortal. So sad.
Okay. What about you know what's funny? I was looking into some of this stuff because I know raw beans bad. Don't eat raw beans. But apparently there was like this recipe going around in like Japan where people were like blitzing up, like blending their raw beans and like sprinkling it over food to like add nutrition. They're like, yeah, if you just add this as like, you know, you would seeds or something, it's great. And people got real sick. So don't eat raw beans and don't blend them and put them on your food. Also, don't cook your beans, essentially.
That's like how people are spreading the... if you like grind up apricot pits or other fruit pits and eat those, it'll cure your cancer, but those have cyanide in them. Don't do that.
That's fucking crazy to me. Like, what we all like, okay, I think a lot of people know by now, like, oh yeah, apple seeds, bad,
yeah.
Cyanide,
yeah.
Things, not good. And then people are like, oh no, it's actually, is it like you fight fire with fire? Like, okay, if I have poison in me, if I add more poison, the second poison will fight the first poison and I'll be fine. It cancels out.
That is exactly how poison works.
I feel like that's how they think it works. It's like in football, or American football, Rob, right? So you get a penalty on one side and you get a penalty on the other side. They call them offsetting penalties, and that's it. And that's how it works with disease. You just have one disease and another one, and it's offsetting disease, no more disease.
I like how you had to specify American football. No footy. Yeah, no footy.
Yeah, not soccer. Okay, whatever you want to call it. Football.
Football.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's how they work. Oh, yeah. And what about, like, aren't we supposed to not actually eat, like, completely raw cashews? Like, isn't it like completely, like, even the cashews that say are raw, like in the store, those ones are actually partially cooked or something?
Yeah, and that's similar to the apricot pit thing, if I remember correctly, has to do with cyanide, which is surprisingly common in things like nuts and seeds.
So what you're telling us is nature is out to kill us.
Absolutely.
No, Rob. If it's natural, it's better. Everyone knows that. If it's natural, it's better for you. Artificial bad, natural good. We all know this.
Oh, from TikTok. I am a terrible wellness influencer.
White sugar bad, coconut sugar, totally fine, super healthy. Yeah. It's got minerals. And that, at the end of the day, that's all. I've heard that we have like 8,000 minerals that we need, and we're only getting like 4 of them. So we got to buy all the products to get the rest of those minerals.
Infamous minerals.
I know. It's so funny to me. It's like, which minerals? Which ones? Which vitamins? It doesn't matter.
Name
it doesn't matter. Who cares?
All of the minerals.
All of them. Oh, that's great.
I think we should dive into all the myths around raw milk, just for the people who haven't seen the 5 billion videos that we've put out about it.
We're still on the fence about it. There's no way. That's light. You're coming up so light, Rob. We've done at least twice that.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Why the raw milk?
There's the John Green factor. I mean, everybody who has the stitch of John Green in their raw milk, that video counts as 10 videos.
Oh, seriously? Like, oh, I've always wanted tuberculosis in my bones. Thanks.
Yes.
I love the way he says that. She had tuberculosis in her bones.
Because, yeah, I had someone message me on Instagram. I was like trying to get them on. They actually are still suffering like long term from drinking raw milk when they were like 5 or 6. They have all these different abilities now. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah. Under the desk news, her grandfather got tuberculosis from raw milk.
Yeah. Interesting. I've seen that. Seen that channel.
So okay. They're like this. Absolutely proof and evidence that it happens. People know people that it's happened to.
What? Well, let's, where do you want to start, Rob, with the raw milk? Why don't we start with all the positives? Okay, we're done with that. Let's go on to the negatives.
That was
Rob.
The entire positives. But no, let's, everybody talks about the study regarding farm kids getting less asthma, right?
So there's a few different studies that kind of investigated that. The one that gets quoted the most, or that gets referenced the most, goes by the Parsifal study. That's what it's referred to as. So if you find people talking about this, you know, they make these big claims of, oh, these kids were fed raw milk from their farms and they didn't have asthma or allergies. Raw milk prevents or cures asthma and allergies. But if you actually go and read the study, they weren't really measuring raw milk versus pasteurized milk. They were measuring, or they were investigating, farm milk versus store-bought milk. And I want to say, like, for half of the participants, their parents were boiling the milk at home. So for half of the study, the milk essentially wasn't raw and wasn't unpasteurized. But people conveniently skip over that entirely. And if you go into, I want to say it's like right. The conclusion or the discussion of this paper, the authors themselves even say raw milk should not be ingested. It's too risky. This study is not about raw milk. We are investigating farm milk in relation to allergies. And we don't really know because our results aren't super significant. And there was a few things in their study that couldn't really be accounted for or explained. So when people quote that and they say that it proves raw milk, whatever, allergies, they're just proving they didn't actually read the paper.
There's a lot of people like that out there that don't read the paper.
Very common.
What I don't understand is so many people seem to say, I drink raw milk, but I boil it first. I've seen that comment. I don't know how many times, and in videos and everything. Why, I guess, is my question. Overall question is, why do people seem to say that and think that boiled milk is somehow still raw, but is it something about pasteurization? Is it a long word? Did we name
it's
it
a long
too
word.
Long?
Yep.
I think it's a long word.
Unfortunately.
It sounds pasteurization. There's like four syllables in that. That sounds way too long. That's too many syllables. We should have just called it clug milk. I always get clug milk, and people are like, oh, yeah, that sounds way better.
Pasteurization. I love me some clug milk.
Clug milk all day. It sounds more natural. I don't know. We should have named it something else.
This podcast has been sponsored by clug milk in a store near you.
It's going to be called clug milk, 100%. But, like, what is it with people and, you know, getting confused between the boiled and pasteurization? Okay, for anyone that doesn't know, or Morticia, tell them about what's the difference between boiling and pasteurization for people who don't know.
So pasteurization, there's different types of pasteurization, and really what is changing between all these different types is how long the milk is being kept at a certain temperature and what that temperature is. So ultra high temp pasteurization, the temperature is going to be much higher than, for example, if you get low temperature pasteurized milk. So there's a few different variables there, but really what it comes down to is time and temperature. A lot of people say that boiled milk is like more harsh than pasteurization. It alters the protein profile a little bit weird. So people say that that's worse than pasteurization. Other people will say pasteurization is better. There's a lot of back and forth, really.
Interesting. What about ultra pasteurization? Did I see that?
So I'll be honest with you. I can't remember like all of the in and outs, all of the details, but I believe that the biggest thing with that is just it's held at a much higher temperature. For longer. The milk that we typically find in stores, for example, in the U.S. and Canada, isn't held to that high of a temperature. It's a little bit lower. And once it has, like, ultra-high temp pasteurization, it's, like, shelf-stable. That's the milk that you can find on store shelves. It's not refrigerated.
Yeah, exactly. God, yeah, that's what I figure. I've seen that, like, ultra-pasteurized milk is just kept on the shelf. I'm like, oh, milk that's just out on your counter. That's mm-hmm. weird. Okay.
But yeah, the great thing there is that the base temperature for pasteurization is lower mm-hmm. than boiling.
Much lower.
So, yeah, everybody boiling their milk, you've actually gone past what is necessary for pasteurization.
That's the great irony, isn't it?
There's many things I don't understand about that.
But personally, my favorite are the people who think that raw milk is better for those that are lactose intolerant.
Yeah, they think like, oh, it has more lactates or whatever. Like, what? What?
Yeah, that one's wild to me because I've seen people get on TikTok claiming to be like healthcare professionals or people with medical backgrounds confidently saying, well, raw milk has lactase in it, so it's better for lactose intolerance. And it's just like, that's literally made up. That has no basis in reality whatsoever. And people are just happily repeating that, even though it's a complete lie.
If the milk had lactase in it, then it would already be breaking down the lactose before pasteurization even happened.
Exactly.
There's just so many things with raw milk. I don't understand any of it. It's all just so very strange to me and weird.
It's wild.
I can't.
When I first saw the raw milk conversations on TikTok, I thought for sure that people were joking or people were trolling. I was like, there's no way that people are really endorsing this product that we've known for now over a century to be really dangerous, to be bad. But yeah, people are just full on shilling bioweapons.
Literally, also for their children too. They're like, oh, if you're not giving it to your kids, you're a terrible parent. Like, what the fuck are you talking? That's insane. What?
Oh yeah. There's people who have gotten on TikTok who,
if anybody out there is on the raw milk fence,
don't. I've seen pregnant women happily drinking gallons of it on TikTok and then telling other pregnant women that they should be drinking this. You are going to put someone in the hospital. Matter of time.
Raw milk is high risk, no reward.
Truly. There's really no reward.
I'd rather go with the apricot seeds.
Okay, which would you rather have? Raw milk or raw oyster?
Okay, let's rank all of them from worst. So obviously Necco wafers are the worst. But of all the other ones, I'm probably gonna go alfalfa sprouts are the least bad because I really like them. And yeah, there's a little chance of this, but you could get a little sick. It's not horrible. And I like alfalfa sprouts. And it's not like with alfalfa sprouts, there's just an alternative that's much safer and it's the same. Because if that was the case, I'd just get that one.
Personally, I've got the non-Canadian raw oysters as the worst because I really don't want to become a quadriplegic. Is that No, it wouldn't be a quadriplegic. That would be paralysis. What would That'd it be if you lost all your limbs?
Well, that would be quadruple amputee. I don't know.
No.
I know the technical term. Bad. That's the technical term. It would be real bad.
Bad. Yep.
But I don't know. Again, with the oysters, you could just cook them. It's just one of these ones where it's just if there's just a simple alternative, why don't you just pick that one?
But Liam, that's too hard. I have to go over to the stove and turn it on. And
I think it's so weird. When it comes to milk and oysters and these things, there's oh, just cook it. And they're like, oh, no, I don't want to. And
Liam.
I'm like, why?
Liam, cooking is for peasants. Cooking and oatmeal are for peasants.
Oatmeal is peasant food. Oh, gosh. I'll take my raw oats with phytic acid over my raw milk with tuberculosis any day of the week. Thank you very much.
Well, see, I'm at an advantage because I'm allergic to shellfish, so I can't have any oysters. But then that just leaves the raw milk, and I'm not too excited about having that.
That's one way to do it.
So.
I guess we never really brought that up. If you're allergic to anything, also don't eat that food. If you're deathly allergic to peanuts, probably shouldn't be going for the Snickers. That's all I'm saying.
Probably a good idea. Probably. Well, Liam, I know you said you like sprouts. I love sprouts. If you heat them up, if you have a panini, you have a grilled sandwich, that lowers the risk for your sprouts. So, just throwing that out there. Just letting you know.
Oh, whoa.
They're better when they're not grilled, of course. They're better when they're nice.
I did not know that, because normally I do have them in cold. But you said you put them in ramen. I want to go back to that. What the hell's going on over there?
Okay, so I have to clarify the kind of sprouts, not like alfalfa sprouts, but like mung bean sprouts. If you've ever gone to a Vietnamese restaurant, they'll sometimes serve you a little side plate with those. They're the thick white ones. Yeah, I like those ones. Those are delicious. But I exercise caution.
But in ramen, like ramen with like the noodles and the broth and the warmth, like that, those things together. So I just clarify.
Yeah, it's really good. I swear. It's so good. Especially in pho.
As opposed to the ramen with the socks and the peanut butter the anchovies.
There could be lots of different type of ramen out there. All right. Weird definitions. Like Canadians have their own weird definition of what bacon is. You know, it's all we're all different.
I've seen people put pepperoni and canned corn in instant ramen, so I don't assume anything.
I mean, I could see that.
But, not me.
So, Morticia, assuming that everyone out there doesn't have a summoning circle to just to call you up at any time, you know, like me and Liam do, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
Well, you can find me on TikTok at Bloodflower, and I'm on Instagram at Fetal Skeletons. So those are the two places you can reach me.
That is the best. forget summoning circle. I'm definitely going Fetal Skeletons all the way.
Yep. If we need to contact you, we'll go through some Fetal Skeletons to get there.
Yeah, they're my favorite to be in a sacrificial circle at a seance. Have some fetal skeletons. I will show up within a solid minute and a half.
And if you drink raw milk, you'll probably end up with a few. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Life hack. Pro tips.
Life hack for anybody trying to make a fetal skeleton. What kind of podcast have we become?
We go different avenues for different things. It's important that we reach all the people.
It's important that you summon your fetal skeletons in moderation.
So true. So we true.
We talk mating rituals of pandas. We talk architecture. We talk fetal skeletons. We talk nutrition. We talk all sorts of things.
A little bit of everything. Keep you guessing.
Speaking of keeping you guessing, I have started taking questions for the 20,000 special. Liam and I are doing a special where we are going to answer questions from you guys. Any question that isn't related to fitness or health.
Anything else,
including what's our favorite fetal skeleton?
Fetal skeleton. It could be about Canadian football. I don't know why you would ask that question. No one watches it, but if you were curious, you could ask a question.
Canadian football is way better than American football.
Okay, and where's the end of the podcast button? I'm out of here. Yeah, go there. Bye.
Hey, wasn't that a great time? Listen to the podcast. You were just, I'm assuming you knew, or you were just listening to in moderation. So if you go ahead and hit the 5-star button, is that a thing? The like that, button?
That's a thing.
No.
Yep.
The like button 5 on YouTube. Stars. If you're on YouTube, hit the like button. Not the dislike button. That's a bad button. The
bad
like button.
Bad don't button. Touch.
Hit
don't
also touchy. Hit all the other buttons. The share. You can go check out
all those things.
Subscribe. Go check out our Patreon. Yeah. We do have a Patreon. It's free to join if you want, or you could give us money. That'd be really cool. Like $1 or $2. It doesn't matter. Whatever you have.
That's where you'll find all the news for this.
We're super appreciative. You can find all sorts of other stuff there. We do giveaways. I think sometimes. You know.
Sometimes.
All that. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, peace.